The draft asset we acquired was far and away the best thing we had got. It's consistent with the direction and plan we talked about this summer.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and I am the lead fantasy analyst at Basketball Monster. And you can find me, as always, on Twitter at redrock_bball. We've got a lot to talk about because there were five games on Thursday. There was a trade that went down. There are nine games to preview for Friday, and we're going to shine that player spotlight up into Philadelphia onto the one and only Robert Covington. So, Michael Bolton, what should we do?
Let's get to it.
That's a great idea. Let's start off by talking about the trade that went down today in the afternoon / early evening / early morning my time. The trade that was discussed a couple of days ago and has finally gone through of Nikola Mirotic heading over to the New Orleans Pelicans. If you did miss it, the trade was Mirotic and the second round draft choice that the Pelicans had already sent to the Bulls. That goes back. There you go, back to the Pelicans in exchange for a first round draft choice this season. Omer Asik, Tony Allen, and Jameer Nelson. You know, I'm going to rip on the Bulls front office as I do often, and I did the other day when talking about this trade just in terms of assets back. I can't believe they had to give still back a second round draft pick. I know that it's probably not going to be a very good one if the Pelicans, you know, finish 20th and you end up with a 50th pick. It's not going to be a good one. But the fact that you still had to give up a pick when you're taking on a bad asset in Asik, you've got to waive guys like Tony Allen, who they've already done, and Jameer Nelson, who I don't know if they're going to waive or not. They say they're not, but what's the point of him being there? You then waive Quincy Pondexter, who you initially, you know, took on to get that second round pick, which you end up giving back. And then your first round pick might be the 20th best pick in this deal for Mirotic. And Mirotic is still a positive asset, by far the best, best player in this deal and probably the best player on the entire Bulls team. I know he didn't want to be there and they wanted to trade him and all that sort of stuff, but just, there's just weird stuff. The Bulls, they didn't give a shit about second round picks, and you can tell me that second round picks don't mean anything. When you're in a rebuild, mate, just get as many picks as you can and try and do something with them, aggregate them in other sort of trades rather than sending them back when you're the one who's giving up the asset and then taking on the bad stuff and then you're giving away picks as well. It's a weird, weird situation, but that is just what the Bulls do, unfortunately. Now, let's talk about it from a fantasy point of view. What I'm going to say now is true for now, especially on the Pelicans side. But with them clearing up these roster spots, it seems almost inevitable that Greggy Monroe is going to land in New Orleans.
As Greg runs in, we realize this could get dangerous.
So I'm going to talk about it as it sort of stands now and what would happen if Monroe does join the Pelicans in my estimation. Talk about the Bulls as well. What it means for Mirotic at the moment is if Monroe doesn't arrive and they don't sign another center, he is in line for a big, big second half of the season. I think he plays more minutes than, or I'm almost certain that he plays more minutes than what he does in Chicago and could very well exceed 30 minutes there next to Anthony Davis. The guys that were taking minutes at those, the four and five positions. Well, one of them was Asik, who's now gone. Cheick Diallo, who Elvin Gentry seems to dislike with an intense passion, so he's not likely to take many of those minutes. Dante Cunningham, who's honestly not very good at all, and Darius Miller was the other guy getting minutes at the four. So Mirotic is going to come in, and he's going to be the best player out of the group. If you added all their abilities together, he's probably still double what those guys can give you. So he is going to come in and command in pretty big minutes initially. Anthony Davis, he doesn't want to play center. We hear this all the time, but he is happy to play center for now, and he will have to do that with Mirotic out there. The other thing I do want to throw out there is that Mirotic is not a small forward. I know he's designated as a small forward on fantasy sites. He is not a small forward. According to Basketball Reference, he hasn't played any percent of his minutes at small forward the last two seasons. There's probably been a couple of minutes in there, but on the overall scheme of his minutes, it's 0%, and he played 3% over his first two seasons. He cannot play at small forward. He is not a bad defender, but when he has to play small forward, yes, he is a bad defender, but you could say that for so many power forwards in the league. If they have to move out and play on the wing exclusively, they're going to get torched. So he is not a small forward. They're not going to start him and Monroe and Davis and play them all together multitudes of times. Now, Gentry can be a bad coach at times, but he's not that bad. They're not going to do that. So if we're assuming that Munro is not there at the moment, then Mirotić is going to have big value. And if for some reason he's on your waiver wire, he 100% shouldn't be. He needs to be owned in every single situation. This is a must-own player type scenario for Mirotić. Now, if... what happens to other guys? Well, I think Etuan Moore loses a little bit there. Yeah, Darius Miller loses. Dante Cunningham obviously loses. But we're talking about, you know, 20-team leagues for Cunningham and probably 16-team league or 14 teams for Darius Miller, who was a nice three-point stream, but he's going to lose some playing time here. I don't think that the absence of Jameer Nelson doesn't make me think that this is all of a sudden a massive boon for Rondo. Nelson hasn't been playing in every single game. Ian Clark will play point guard, and the other bloke who's going to play it is the guy who's their best point guard, and that is, of course, Jrue Holiday. Then you can play Holiday, Miller, Moore, Mirotić, Davis. You can run that as a lineup. I mean, Clark's going to be involved there. You could even put Mike James out there for a little bit of playing time. So this is not an automatic boon for Rondo. It wasn't like Nelson was coming in and stealing all of his minutes. There were games where Nelson was DMP CDing, and you were having Rondo and Clark play those minutes, and of course, Holiday. And with the addition of Mirotić playing the four, it does move Dante Cunningham down to play a little bit more at the three, which again can force Holiday to play at the one a little bit. So I don't think there's a huge change there for Rondo, who has been putrid for the majority of this season. So Moore loses a little bit. Miller loses a little bit here for this team. And Mirotić is in a really, really strong position. The minutes should be increased from where they were in Chicago. But if Greg Munro does arrive, then there is going to be an impact on Mirotić, because I believe that Munro and Davis will be the starters, Davis at the four, and they'll run those three guys as a front court rotation. There's 96 minutes at the four and the five. Davis will take 36 of them, leaving us 60 minutes between the other players that play there. So if we be relatively conservative and think that maybe, let's say it would be really conservative and say there's 45 minutes if Dante Cunningham gets 15 minutes at the four, which would be a gross misuse of your roster to do that, but Gentry could do it. There's 45 minutes, that's 23 for Munro, 22 for Mirotić. There's still value there, but I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think you're going to have at least 50 minutes to split between Mirotić and Munro, 25 apiece, and in 25 apiece, both of those guys are top 100 sort of players and probably top 80 guys in the 25 minutes. We that remains to be seen exactly how Gentry will do that and what he will do with Cunningham. But if he's realistic, Cunningham should be playing really down in the low teens in minutes, 10, 11 minutes per game. Or the other guy you should be putting there is Darius Miller. Cunningham can move across and play backup three as well. I would much rather that happen than that take those minutes away from a guy like Munro or Mirotić. But with everything the way it's aligning now, Mirotić is a clear must-own. I would, and I've said this before, I would own Munro as well. I think this is where he is going to end up. He could end up in Boston. There's still a chance he could start in Boston and play 24 minutes a night, probably less of a chance, but he could end up in New Orleans and play 25 to 26 minutes, and Mirotić could get 26 as well in that scenario and have really, really good value. Of course, this could all change. Things could change a lot here with this team. And Mirotić, you know, playing with Jrue, playing with Anthony Davis is a little bit different to playing with Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen. And those guys are going to get more touches, but Mirotić will be able to run things more with a bench unit, be that scorer who's not just a spot-up guy as that he was misused with the Bulls last season, be able to create his own shot, you know, do some stuff off the dribble, and be able to knock down those shots and be a guy who can really patrol things. And that front court mix, Jesus, imagine if it was Boogie, Davis, and Mirotić as a front court trio. Jesus, that would be really, really sensational. Of course, Boogie not there for the rest of the year. So I'm pretty confident in what Mirotić is going to do for the rest of the year. Ashik's not going to play in Chicago. Nelson's not going to play either. Campaign's actually returning. And I can see Payne taking some of Jaren Grant's minutes as they try and work out what to do. They've also said that they're going to give Paulie Zipsa and Chris Felizio some minutes, because Felizio, despite being there 2 years already and them just signing him to a four-year, $32 million contract, they need to see what they've got in him. Surely before you give someone a four-year, $32 million deal, you've got an idea of what you've got in him. Yes, you misvalued it, but you don't need to play him now after you've given those that contract just to see what he's what he can do. We've seen it. You should have, hopefully you would have seen it before you said, mate, can we lock you up for 4 years and $32 million in what looks like a horrendously negative asset at the moment? And I thought it could be okay, but he has been dreadful this season. Ashik's not going to play. Nelson's not going to play. Tony Allen has been waived already. So the changes for Chicago, they happen based on who's already there. So of course, the guy who's going to get the boost is PunchBob Shiploke, who should see his minutes rise. Remember, he is still going to be a backup, but he's going to play backup minutes at the four. and some at the five, but I think some of his backup center minutes will be reduced so they can get Felizio in there. We also are going to see Zipsa play some at the four as well. So it's not like Portis is coming out and playing 30 minutes a night, but he is a guy to grab. I would prioritize him behind Mirotić clearly if they're on the wire together. Mirotić would be the guy that I would grab, but Punchbob is a guy that you can go and add. You know, I don't think he's a very good player. He's a horrendous, horrendous defender. But losing all of Mirotić's usage, that's going to go to Bob. And he's going to put up shots. And there are going to be some poor efficiency nights. There are going to be some big scoring nights. I would label Punch Bob a must-own guy at this point as well. Got him projected at about 27 minutes at the moment. But I don't feel super confident. It could go to 24 as they give more Zipser and Felizio a run. It could go to 30 as they play him as the primary backup, giving him 18 or 16 minutes behind Markkanen, and then playing him a ton at center as they reduce Robin Lopez's role or trade Lopez out, which is another distinct possibility. We've already seen Lopez, I think three out of the last four games, play under 20 minutes. So there are some minutes there for Porter. So he is a clear must-own guy. Not much else changes in terms of must-own ability for these guys in Chicago because Nelson and Ashik aren't going to play. And Felizio gets a little bit of a bump, as does Zipsa, but that's 30-team league stuff that you're really talking about with those guys there. All right, let's move on to talking about what actually did go down on Thursday. It was a weird day in the NBA, of course, when news like this goes down with Mirotić always scrambling to find out what's going on. But then it ended up with an absolutely brilliant game, a brilliant final quarter, maybe more to be more accurate, between the Thunder and the Nuggets, with the Nuggets pulling it out late. But the monstrous line of the night goes to someone on the Thunder, and that is Paulie George, who had 43, 5 and 5, 5 triples, 2 steals, and was 19 of 26 from the field. Did not get to the free throw line at all, which is very, very weird. But he kept the Thunder in this when they were getting spanked early on, and he'd be pretty pissed that they ended up losing the game. He was really fantastic, and he has been awesome this year as the 15th ranked player and the 7th ranked player over the last 2 weeks, averaging 35 and 2.5, 3.5 triples and 2 steals. And something that we talked about a lot at the start of the season was how poor his two-point shooting was and how his three-point shooting was actually bigger than his two-point shooting. And one of those two things was going to change one way, that threes were either going to drop way down or his twos were going to come back up to normal. And what we've seen over the last month is the twos have come back up. He's still shooting 42% from three, but now he's at 51% overall as his two-point percentage has started to normalize. And he is crushing it at the moment, putting up huge, huge numbers. And really, really going to town. And yeah, there is a chance that he can finish the season as a top 12 guy, which I don't think many people would have anticipated at the start of the year. I was still pretty big on picking him in the second round, back end of the second round, but he has exceeded my expectations playing alongside Russell Westbrook. I definitely wasn't someone who faded him. Many people put that, oh man, you can't succeed next to Westbrook. And the obvious answer to that was, well, Kevin Durant did pretty okay being the number one ranked fantasy guy for about 4 years playing next to Westbrook. And Paul George is not Kevin Durant, but he's pretty bloody good. And he is putting up some strong, strong numbers at the moment. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Dan Green of the San Antonio Spurs. 22 points for Greeny, 6 boards, 3 assists. He hit 3 triples. He had 3 steals and he had a block. That's where he does his damage in those triple one categories. He has been a disappointment this year. That is 100% accurate. Still averaging a triple one at 1.6 points, 1.6 triples, 1 steal and 1.1 blocks, but only 8.6 points and only 3.6 rebounds. This is a guy who was a top 50 guy 3 seasons ago because his efficiency was up, because he was rebounding, scoring more and hitting 2.4 threes per game. That has obviously dropped off as his usage has gone down from 17.5 that year. He's down to 16.5 this season. And the large reason that his usage is actually up from where it was last year at 13 is the absence of Kawhi Leonard. He's an interesting guy if you're looking for defensive numbers out of your guards. He's not a must-own player. He's more of a 14-team league guy, but he can be owned in 12-team leagues depending on your squad. Once Kawhi comes back, I think he is going to lose out quite a bit, and his minutes are going to fluctuate. We saw in the last game that Bryn Forbes closed over him. He's not going to get 30 a night under any circumstance. So he's fine to own in certain spots, but in general, he's more of a deeper league sort of a player. The young gun of the night, the blue arrow, Jamal Murray. Remember when everyone was shitting themselves? Well, not everyone, but a lot of people were panicking. Man, I've got to drop this bump. Got to drop him. He's the 63rd ranked player this season. He had 33, 3, and 5 with 5 triples and 14 of 23 from the field. He looked super in control in this game, putting up huge numbers, just getting to the rim whenever he wanted to, crazy angles, crazy finishes. He was just torching Westbrook, who in the end, they ended up sort of switching him off and putting Adams onto him a lot of the time, which was quite weird. He was just crushing it, Murray. As I said, 63rd ranked player for the season, but over the last 2 weeks, 15th. Averaging 23.5, 3.5 threes, 4.5 rebounds, 4.5 assists, and doing that while only getting you 0.4 steals. If he could be somehow get to 1.5 steals, we're talking about, you know, in the future as a potential consistent top 25 player, but those steal numbers are going to hold him back. He's also shooting in those last seven games, 55% from the field and 52% from three numbers, which of course won't be able to sustain, but he's a 46% shooter for the year, 38 from three, and this is a bloke who started out the season shooting absolutely horrendously, and that's why people were, oh man, can't hold this guy, stinker. And that's something we always have to remember, is that when blokes come out for the first five or six games of the year and shoot 24% or 15% from three or whatever it was he's shooting, it's not going to continue, and there are going to be hot streaks like this. You know it's not going to continue, although some people still can't get that burnt into their head. It won't continue, and it will happen again next year. There'll be someone that comes out and shoots 20% over the first seven games, and people are all up in arms, and then it will start to come back together. Murray has been excellent this year. He is locked in as the point guard of the future for this team. There's been some interesting Malone moments with his minutes earlier on in the year, but that has definitely stopped. He is clearly the guy there over Manny Moutier, and looked unbelievably awesome. Lots of calls saying this was his breakout game. He's been really good for a long time, as I mentioned, yeah, putting up some really strong numbers. He's had only in his last seven games, only one game of single of 1-3. Everything else has been at least two triples in that time. He's had at least five assists in all of those games, bar two. The thing is, he just needs to get those steals up to really push himself to become a top 20 fantasy guy. Not sure that's ever going to happen. He could find himself in that CJ McCollum, Dame Lillard zone of being a 0.8 to 0.9 steals guy, which does limit your overall upside, but he is pushing forward to become an elite fantasy player. The dart of the night. I tell a man's not hot. There's not much to talk about here. Chris Paul's the dud of the night, 10-3-2 with two steals and 5 of 14 shooting. He pushed himself back from that groin issue. He wasn't himself early on, was tentative, came back and hit a couple of key jumpers later on when the Spurs were sort of pushing to close the gap. Nothing to really be too concerned. Let's hope he gets himself healthy and starts pushing 34, 35 minutes a night again, as he was earlier on. But injuries are always going to be a nagging concern for Chris Paul, and let's just hope he stays healthy. Nothing to really care too much about when we look at the dud of the night there for Chrissy Paul. The question of the day comes from Spencer Chan, who says, he's on Twitter at SChan1031, and he says, what is your go-to drink? I assume, Spencer, that you're meaning alcohol. I used to just be a beer drinker, and not to play to the bearded white person stereotype. I enjoy drinking local beers. I enjoy drinking craft beers, different types of beers. I get beer boxes sent to my house of limited edition, small batch, local brewery stuff that I enjoy drinking. I don't really drink any mass-produced beer at all. That makes me a hipster, then so be it. But recently I've been branching out and drinking some other stuff, and probably the thing that's coming close to beer now in my repertoire is gin and tonics. Really getting into them, different types of gins as well. Drinking a lot more gin and tonic, and a lot more red wine at the moment as well. So they're pushing back up. I'd say a gin is getting close to feeling as refreshing as what a beer does on a really hot day. Beer is still number one, and that would be what I'd go to most of the time. But yeah, gin and tonic really pushing it up there and getting pretty close to the go-to drink for me at the moment. So thank you for that question, Spencer. Let's move on now and talk about these five games that we do have to go through across Thursday. The first one of those was the Toronto Raptors and the Washington Wizards. Jonas Valanciunas, 29 minutes, 17 points and 6 rebounds with 2 triples on 7 of 8 shooting. I don't know what this is. I don't know why Dwayne Casey is all of a sudden trusting Valanciunas and keeping him in there. I have said it for however long this is the fifth season this podcast has been going. Valanciunas is good. I don't know why his minutes... I do know why his minutes was limited. I thought it was a little bit excessive, you know, playing him like 15, 17 minutes a night as he did earlier this season. But he has been strong, offensively really, really good. And of course, he is a must-own guy. If we're going to see his minutes remain at this level, if Casey goes back to the 16 a night, then it gets tougher. But I don't think that's going to be the case. Kyle Lowry was great, apart from at the end of the game. 29-5-5 with 3 steals, a block, and 4 triples. And by the end of the game, I mean the very end with the free throws. While DeRozan had 23-5-6. The Jedi.
Hello there.
OG Anunoby. He hit 3 triples. His 3-point shot had sort of been missing for a while. 11 points. Didn't do too much else. I still really like him long-term in Dynasty, but it's going to be, I reckon, 2 to 3 years away before he can be a consistent top 80, top 100 sort of a player. Jakob Poeltl got into early foul trouble, so we saw a little bit of Bebe. Poeltl had 8-5 in 16 minutes. Still like Poeltl. Interesting to see what they do at that center position next season. D'Lon Wright, only 13 minutes. Even with Freddie VanVleet out, 0 points, 2 rebounds, and 2 assists, he is in a horrid, horrid slump. With so many weird waiver wire options coming up at the moment, if you've got Wright in a 10, a 12, maybe even a 14, I'd be happy casting him inside. His upside is pretty limited if everyone's healthy. He doesn't have this clear path to 28 minutes a night or 30 minutes a night. And they are limiting what he's doing, giving more minutes to VanVleet when he plays a little bit more to CJ Miles because he is struggling so much. So leave him for deep leagues. I still like what he can do. I still think he can be a useful fantasy guy. But when he cools off like this and when the minutes drop, you just move on and grab someone else. On to the Wizards. No John Wall, of course. So they get another victory, which is counterintuitive, but it is what it is. My boy Thomas Satoransky, 28 minutes, 10-3-4 with 2 steals. He is good. I think he would be a starting point guard on a handful of teams in the NBA. I don't think there's any risk of Tim Frazier taking the minutes off him on a regular basis. He is a fine, solid, short-term-ish, well, might not be short-term because your season might be over by the time John Wall comes back. He is a back-end 12-team league guy while Wall is out. He can do many things, rebound, score, hit threes, get assists, get steals as well, and that can be useful. Another one of those guys that if you've got D'Lon, yeah, I'd definitely grab Satoransky over him with that little bit of upside he's got. Markieff Morris is a must-own guy, I think, as well in 12s. 15-7 in 32 minutes, while Porter had a strong game. Actually got 6 assists, which is not something you see from Otto all that often. 16-11-6, while Beale had 27-6-6. 3 steals, 3 triples, and a block, and that big performance, I guess, gets lost in amongst the Paulie Georges and Nikola Jokic's of the day, who had monsters of their own. The next game, we look at the Memphis Grizzlies and the Detroit Pistons. The Grizzlies were without Chandler Parsons, Mario Chalmers, of course, no Tyreke Evans, but we did get the return of Jermichael Green to sort of give us a little bit more understanding of the rotation there. Wayne Seldon, I talked about him exclusively yesterday. He played 31 minutes again and had 7, 2, and 3. This is something that I highlight, and I made a point of highlighting it, is that those last 2 games, yeah, they were good, but the 2 games prior to that, they were terrible, and this one falls back into that terrible category. He's inconsistent. He's not as good as those last 2 games showed us. He's probably not as bad as this one showed us. He was an absolutely fine guy to own in 12-team leagues. You can do it, but don't expect huge levels of production all the time from Wayne Seldon. I don't know what happens when Chalmers comes back. I don't know what happens when Parsons comes back, how his minutes look. Same thing I could say for Dylan Brooks, who had 13-4-3 in 32 minutes. And they're fine to if you've got them in 12s, but they are really fringe guys who could see a dip in their numbers. I've been impressed with Andy Harrison lately, though. He was one of the worst players in the NBA last season. 18-4-8 as the point guard here. Definitely fine grabbing him and running with it and seeing how they go. We'll see what they do. They should persist with Harrison over Chalmers. I don't think there's any doubt about that. They should continue to see if Harrison can be a viable backup point guard, and he could rack up some numbers for you. So he is a guy to look at, even in 12-10 leagues, while my boy Deontay Davis, he's showing much more stuff now than he's shown at any point in his career. 12-8 with a block can be a very, very impactful fantasy guy. If you're in a 16-team league, I'd add him. If you're in a 14-team league, I'd consider it. He's clearly ahead of Brandon Wright. We're seeing him get all of the backup center minutes. Had 15 minutes today and still put up 12-8 with a block. That is a huge, huge performance, and he is a guy that I'm really interested in. And if he ever gets 28 a night, then he, I feel, would be a top 60 fantasy guy if he ever got that sort of role. So it's something to watch. Ennis returned, had 5 points and a triple one in his 15 minutes, while Jarrell Martin started over Jermichael Green, but Green is the player that closed. This has got all the hallmarks of a minute share or a time share. 28 to Martin here, 20 to Green, but I could see it going to a 25-23 easily in the next game, and that means leave them alone for your standard formats. For the Pistons, Blake Griffin made his debut, and it was just the same old Blake. 24-10-5, two blocks. Huge game from him. Andre Drummond looked fine as well. 14-15, 3 assists, 3 steals, and a block. So the assists a little bit below average, which is sort of what we assumed would happen with Blake there. He didn't close the game. He only played 28 minutes, and Van Gundy said it was because of his fouls and also because he wanted a shooter out there. So we had Tone Tolliver play at the four and Griffin be the closing lineup five. I don't think you're going to have Drummond only playing 28 a night from here on out. But the way that they ran things with Willie Reed barely playing, Eric Morland only getting 5 minutes. Now, Tolliver is going to remain as an elite three-point streamer, a little bit less value than before because he's not going to have that 28-minute upside. But in your 16-team leagues, he can be a useful guy. Stan Johnson, 36 minutes, 14, 3, and 3. The usage went down from 30% without Blake, only 18 here, but still put up some strong, solid numbers. And I reckon he is fine for 12-team leagues. I would definitely have him over Wayne Seldon, as I would with Reggie Bullock, who had 15 points on 50% shooting. Now, Johnson's got the ability to fill up your stat sheet in multiple categories. Bullock doesn't. He can be a high-efficiency points and three sort of a guy, occasionally get you some steals, whereas Johnson can do it in other areas. So at this point, I'd probably look at Johnson over Bullock, but it really depends on how your team looks. Well, Luke Kennard, who was, we're going to give him 25 minutes a night before the trade, has played 21 in each of the last two, 4, 1, and 2. I put a question out today, who's been the worst first-round pick of this year's draft? And multiple people told me Luke Kennard, which is astoundingly bad to me. It goes to the thing that people shit on the Pistons for taking Kennard over Mitchell, which in hindsight looks really dumb. We know that. But the bloke who was picked one ahead of Kennard is Malik Monk, and he has been absolutely dreadful. Kennard is shooting 43% from three on over 100 attempts, which is excellent as a rookie. He has shown plenty of stuff for this team on the court. He is by no means the worst first-round pick. The worst first-round pick is Tyler Lydon. I don't think there's too much debate there. DJ Wilson's pretty close, and that's actually the bloke that prompted me to send that question out because I was watching the Bucks going, man, this guy's terrible. Like, why? That was a bad pick. Yeah, you can make the argument that Monk at 11 was really not an ideal pick as well if you're going to really factor position into it. But I don't think you could have Kennard in that conversation at all, even though the pick after is Mitchell. But I think that skews what Kennard has done by saying, well, you could have had Mitchell after it. Yeah, well, so could have the Knicks, so could have the Blazers, so could have the Hornets, so could have anybody. They could have all had Mitchell, but they didn't. So that doesn't take away from Kennard just because the bloke behind him was good. I still think that Mitchell shouldn't have been there at 13 in hindsight. He should have been gone much earlier. And Kennard is doing pretty much what you wanted him to do, and I think he's been pretty solid. But that's enough of me talking about what I did on Twitter. The next game, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Let's start by talking about Malcolm Brogdon, who went down on a non-contact injury, and we all feared the worst, an ACL injury. The Bucks immediately ruled him out for the game, but they immediately also said that it's a right quadricep tendon strain. And everyone said, oh, phew, that's good. That's great. And it's good that it's not an ACL. That's good. But we have to remember that quadricep strains have kept Kawhi Leonard out for pretty much the entirety of this season. His is a tendinopathy, which is basically just a diseased quadricep tendon that hasn't healed properly. Tony Parker missed 8 months with a torn quadricep tendon. Wayne Seldon missed the first 3 or 4 months of this season with a quadricep tendon issue. This is not a small injury. This is going to sideline Brogdon for, I would say, minimum a week. If it's just a mild strain, minimum. But the fact that he was in a stabilizing air cast, he was on crutches, he didn't want to talk to the media because he was upset, he was immediately ruled out for the game, makes me think that this has the potential to be a season ender. I don't know that it is, and I can't say with certainty, but if you put a gun to my head, and that'd be a pretty weird thing to put a gun to my head, Josh, I'm going to kill you if you don't tell me your opinion on Malcolm Brogdon's injury. But if you did that, if that was your way that you rolled, I would say that we're not going to see Brogdon until April at the earliest, would be my guess. Purely a guess based on all those factors, the mood of him in the locker room, the air cast, the crutches, the immediate rule out, the fact that these quad injuries are an issue, the way it looked on the court, it doesn't look great. We're not dropping him yet. You just hold and you wait to see what tomorrow brings because the Bucks are going to have to announce something because he played. But we also remember that when Jabari Parker tore his ACL for the second time, the Bucks announced it as a knee sprain. And then they said, oh, actually, yeah, it's a sprain. It's a sprain where it's sprained all the way through his ACL and he's done. So that is, sprains and strains, all that sort of talk initially is very much, hedging your bets. the downcastness of Brogdon makes me think that this is an injury that's not going to be a 2-3 day sort of a situation. So let's watch and see how it goes. But who benefits? Well, Tone Snell will start, and we know what Tone Snell will do in 35 minutes. He'll give you 4 points, he'll give you 1-3, and he'll give you nothing else. So he is not an option for 12-team leagues. He's not an option for 14-team leagues. The guy who really gets me interesting is Sterling Brown. Sterlo's a guy who played 24 minutes here, had 7-3. I wouldn't say he's necessarily a must-own 12, but in a 16, I would grab him. In a 14, I would grab him. The other guy who becomes really interesting is Matty Dellavedova, playing backup point guard, and could get you 6 assists per game in 23 to 24 minutes, and that's going to have 12-team value as well. So Dally would be an interesting guy. If I'm in anything like 16 teams, I'd grab Dellavedova, and same with Sterling Brown. They're the two guys that I would look at there in that zone, whereas Snell, man, he's bad. 1-of-9 shooting for 2 points in 29 minutes. Dellavedova's better. Sterling Brown is better, and not just from a fantasy point of view. The sexy boy, Sean Kilpatrick. 10 points in 18 minutes with a triple and a block. He could see some extra time, but remember that the statue that is Jason Terry was out of this game, so maybe that's why Kilpatrick got those minutes. He is a two-way guy. Well, Xavier Munford is a real person, and he played 7 minutes and had 3 points as the backup point guard when Brogo went down. The Muppet had 14-8. I don't know why his ownership is so low. He should be owned in all leagues, in my opinion, while Middleton had 21-6-4 with 4 steals. The return of Jabari Parker is happening tomorrow. If Brogdon is out long-term and Parker can just sort of slot into... I thought Brogdon was a chance to lose his starting role anyway and lose a bit of value. So Parker's return there doesn't... It's not going to impact too much on Yanni, on Chrissy Middleton, on Eric Bledsoe, if Brogdon does happen to be out long-term. The other thing that happened is Yanni suffered an ankle sprain late in the game, and he was limping pretty significantly. So there's a real chance that he doesn't play on Friday and might miss some time too. He had 17, 15, and 6 in this game. Onto the Timberwolves. Karl Anthony Towns took the second most shots on this team, amazingly. 13 shots with Jim Butler taking 15. 24-11 with 3 assists for Townsy. Butler had 28, 4-6 with a steal. Big numbers from those guys, and that's exactly how it should go. Wigo was bad. 7 points on 10 shots, 6 boards and 3 steals. At least he brought the defense, the 3 steals and a block there, but man, he is bad. He still should be owned, but he's not good. Well, Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
Only 28 minutes for Teague, minutes going down every game. 9 points, 8 assists, and a triple one. Still a guy to hold, but it's really interesting to see what they do with him and Tyus Jones, who had 4-3-4 in just 17 minutes. A guy who does play quite well with these starters. It's going to be an interesting scenario to see if they continue to limit Teague. I don't think they will, but I guess Tibbs is being a little bit more proactive in that regard than I thought he would be. The next game we take a look at, the Houston Rockets and the San Antonio Spurs. Jim Harden's really good. 28, 2-11, 5 triples, 1 steal, 2 blocks, 50% shooting. That is ludicrous. Well, Clint Capella had 14-13 with a steal and 5 blocks in 35 minutes. And I don't care what Kevin Durant says about his job being easy. If his job was that easy, anyone could do it, and they can't. And other people can't do what Clint Capella can do. And you can say, oh, all you got to do is roll to the rim, and whatever. You can say that, but it's not. He's good. He's really, really good at what he does, and his free agency is going to be an interesting restricted case given the squeeze on restricted guys and centers, but he is worth a ton. Ryan Anderson had a strong game, 13 points with 3 triples, not moving the needle for me. While PJ Tucker played 31, Gerald Green had 30 minutes, 15 points with Eric Green out. He is an interesting stream while we wait for Gordon and Ariza to return. Onto the Spurs. Aldridge was piss poor, 16-8 in... That's not piss poor. It's, I guess, a bit of a letdown. 16-8 in 34 minutes. Still some strong efficiency, no defensive numbers. While Pau Gasol was benched at halftime, 20 minutes, 6-7 with 2 steals and 2 blocks. They still got the numbers going, but only took 1 shot and missed it. Patty Mills started after a halftime, and he was bad. 4-2-2 in 23 minutes. He is not a guy that you want to own outside of the very, very deep leagues. Well, DeJounte Murray... Only 24 minutes for Muzz, 6 points, 11 rebounds, 3 assists, continues to just rack up those rebounds at a huge rate, must be owned, I think, in 12-team leagues, while Kyle Anderson, 7-4, a steal and a block, absolutely has 12-team league value. But if there's someone out there, Mirotic, Punchbob Shiploke, any of these guys, Greggy Munro, who have got upside to push further forward as the season goes on, whereas Anderson's just at this 100 sort of level who's going to drop eventually, then I make that switch. I would make that switch immediately to get those guys. Even though he is putting up good numbers, he's just such a capped player who is going to drop at some point. Some of that depends on your standings. If you're taking a flyer on Alex Len over Kyle Anderson, I probably wouldn't do that if I'm in the sixth spot and battling for the playoffs. But in a lot of other cases, I'd be happy to move on from Kyle. And I like Kyle Anderson. The last game, the Thunder and the Nuggets, an absolute rip-roarer. 124 for the Thunder, 127 for the Nuggets. Westbrook, 20 points on 18 shots. At least he hit all four of his free throws, but his efficiency was in the toilet. Two triples, two steals and a block, 9 rebounds and 21 assists. And if anyone ever tells you that Russell Westbrook is an elite defender, if they tell you he's a good defender, make him watch this game. His defense was atrocious. We all saw that play, the last play of the game, when he literally just stood under the rim while Gary Harris just ran out to the corner to hit that game-winning three. Westbrook just did not even move at all. And that's not the only... He couldn't guard Jamal Murray. He couldn't do anything. He is a bad defender. He gets steals. Doesn't mean you're a good defender. And that's one of the more annoying Twitter arguments that occasionally comes my way. He is not a good defender, but those numbers are still bloody good. Yeah, 29 and 21 with two steals and a block, even though the efficiency's in the toilet. Terry Jones, only 4 minutes, was doing the old Rocket Rodney Hood, had a little bit of the poo issue going, had a 4 trillion, was able to come back into the game, but it was available to return, but he didn't. So that meant that Alex Abrines played 29 minutes, 13 and 2 with two triples and the rare two blocks for Abrines. It's much like a Freddie Van Vliet block. Do not get excited about those blocks there. I don't know if Abrines will maintain this role. He was pushing a little bit into Fergo's minutes anyway, but it's really just a deep league sort of situation. Joshy Huster struggled in 12 minutes. We're not really caring about him for fantasy. Mello, 10 points, not a good night, while Steve-O Adams had 10 and 8 in 32. On to the Nuggets. Nick Jokic played at center because no Mason Plumlee. 29, 13, 14, two triples, one steal, two blocks, elite efficiency. Someone tweeted me today, I think it was someone by the name of Devin, apologize if your name is wrong, Devin, and he said, is this the sort of thing we can expect from Jokic moving forward without Plumlee? And you wouldn't expect this every night, but he could do this regularly. Look, this is how good this guy can be now that he's in more of a groove, you know, playing that at the right position. The pass that he executed to get Gaz open for that game-winning shot was, I can't even, you're sure you've seen it. Go and watch it if you haven't. Go and watch this pass that Jokic throws from an inbound with like 1 second left. It is bananas. Also, you know, one of the great late game interviews when they say what happened, he goes, oh, I saw Westbrook fall asleep, so I just flinged it out there to Gaz. And there he was to knock in the game-winning three, which is very, very humorous. The fact that he knew it was Westbrook not paying attention, and I reckon he's got it in his head, I'm going to watch where Russ is going here and try and pick this out, even though that wasn't the play. The play was an alley-oop lob to try and get the game-winner, but just move to the second option. Spotted Gaz, led him onto the ball perfectly. It was amazing. Go and watch. If you love sexy passing, that Jokic pass to set up the game-winner was...
pretty good. It's pretty, 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 pretty good.
Yep. And you know what?
Nice, Gary!
He was bloody good as well. 25 with 5 triples. You just never think it's going to miss. He is so good. That contract, as much as the Woj replies were just inundated with who's, he's really good. And again, I still think that he would have been in consideration from the All-Stars in the East if he had been there. That's how good I think that he can become. 25-3-3 with 5 triples, just absolutely fantastic numbers. And yes, Paul Millsap coming back will probably have an impact on him. It shouldn't, but that depends on how Malone uses them. Quickly on that Eastern Conference All-Star, I'm super happy for Goran Dragic getting that. He has played so well for so long. Really good to see him get recognized, but there is no way that I thought he should have been the All-Star option. It should have been Kemba or it should have been Ben Simmons over Dragic. It was clear that the coaches had voted for him just because Miami had the fourth seed, not a way that I would look at anything in regard to All-Star voting, but that's clearly what they did. And that's why Dragic got that spot. I would comfortably have had Kemba and Simmons ahead of him in that all-star pecking. But really, really happy that Dragic got it. I'm a big fan, huge fan of his mustache as well. So glad that he got that spot. Baby Neck Wilson Chandler started after the one game starting of Darrell Arthur came to an end. He played 59 seconds. It was always a weird move yesterday. Baby Neck had 4 and 4 in 34 minutes and 2 blocks. I've never seen a bloke look more cooked than what Chandler does at the moment. The drop-off from him from last season to this season is astonishing. He just looks terrible. You could give him 75 minutes a game, and I don't think that he would be a 12-team league guy. That's how piss poor he is. Farton Will Barton had 15, 6, and 4. It's good to see him defer to the other three better players, Murray, Harris, and Jokic. Still strong numbers and still should be owned, of course. While Trey Lyles, I think he's a comfortable drop in 12-team. It's 15 minutes for him while Kenny Faried came in and played the 10 minutes. That wraps up all of the action from Thursday. I am going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to preview Friday's games. We're at 9 of them, and we're going to shine that player spotlight on a much maligned and much praised Philadelphia 76er, Bob Cove. So we'll be back to talk about that in a minute or so.
You've got to sing it on your own time, or at least when I'm out of town. You know you're gonna have to buy me jewelry now. There are boxes in the attic, they are flattened from unpacking, and I'll tape them back together for this. I don't care about your boots no more, and I don't care how many ways there are to leave you. I am picking the first one, and I will know by the number of steel guitars on your next endeavor how sad you are.
All right, guys, we're back. Let's go into that player spotlight, and we're going to look at Robert Covington of the Philadelphia 76ers. Bob Cove is a very, very interesting fantasy player, a guy who goes through hot and cold stretches, a guy who was atrocious to begin last season, had many people curse, why did I pick this bloke at 70 or 80 or whatever I picked him, terrible, dropped him, and then finished the season as the 40th best player in fantasy, came home with an astonishing hot streak. This year, it's been the opposite. He started off hot, and he has faded, and he's faded in a decently significant way, but I think people overblow the struggles that Covington is having. Yeah, he's the 45th ranked player over the season, averaging 13.2 points, 2.7 triples, almost 6 boards, 2 assists, 1.6 steals, and 0.8 blocks, 41 and 86, shooting 38% from 3. So people think, you know, look at that, that's really good, clearly. Over the last month, he's the 98th ranked player because he's shooting at 38% and only 34% from 3, meaning his scoring has dipped clearly and his usage has dropped in that time too. I guess that's a confidence thing, also not taking the shot when they're not going in. But he's still getting you some steals, just not as many as he got at the start of the year. But 98th isn't terrible. And then people will tell you that, oh, he's been terrible lately. Over the last 2 weeks, he's still the 58th ranked player. 12 points, 2.5 threes, over a steal, over a block. You know that field goal percentage is going to be an issue for Covington, so you should have been well aware of that when you drafted him. He was always going to be in line to dip a little bit in terms of his rebounds. He was at 6.5 last season. He's at 5.7 this year. 1.6 steals is marginally lower than last year, and his blocks are a little bit down. So yeah, he's having a worse season than last year, but he is averaging more points per game. He is hitting more threes per game this year, and he's doing them at a higher clip. And his usage is not that different. He's taking, in fact, only 0.3 shots per game less. He's doing it in more minutes. That means his usage is a little bit lower, but it's only 1.7% lower than last season. He is a guy that's had four consecutive, if this 45 rank holds, four consecutive top 100 fantasy finishes. And yeah, he's just signed that new contract. But we do have to remember that he is 27 years of age. Right, he's not a guy that's going to really improve too much from here. He could start to get his field goal percentage up a couple more percent. Maybe he, instead of being a 41% guy, he can be a 44% player. And that would actually increase his value fairly significantly and give him a little bit more stability. But he's going to be streaky. We know this about Covington, but he's still going to bring steals. He still can block some shots. He still gets rebounds, and he still hits threes, even if the efficiency of those does drop. He's a clear must-own player to me in all 12-team leagues, in all 10-team leagues. And I'm sure most of you would agree with that, despite the piss-poor stretches that he does have. I would never have picked him at pick 45 or at pick 40 or anything like that. But he's a strong mid-round sort of a player that is going to have poor performances. In fact, his three of his last four games, he shot under 30% from the field, including three in a row there. But then last game, He had only 6 points, but shot it efficiently, but still brings a steal, brings a block. And they're the little things that keep your value up. And that's why guys like the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma and Andrew Wiggins, is when they have a poor shooting night, nothing else comes from them. And that doesn't enable their value to be buoyed. Whereas a guy like this, if he has a bad shooting night, then he can get you a steal. He gets you the blocks and he does it really consistently. He is a team, a guy that, for his career, his on-off numbers are out of control. For Philadelphia in his 4 years, plus 10.1, plus 5.5, plus 6.2, and even this year, with better players around him, still plus 11.8. They are huge, huge numbers for a guy like that. Yeah, really strong, strong defender, good defensive box score plus-minus. I think he was the number one overall small forward in ESPN's Real Defensive Plus-Minus last season. Really strong on-ball defender, quick hands, and gets those steals. Has dipped a little bit in that area this year, but is able to defend very, very well on the perimeter, play the three and the four, and it takes a ton of threes, and he gets them to go in, doesn't hit them at the highest percentage, but that's pretty much who he is at this point. Where do we expect him to go from here, or how does he get better? I don't think that, again, it's just going to be in maybe honing that efficiency, but at the age of 27, in his fifth year in the NBA, I don't really see it and go, well, I think he's going to turn the corner and do way more stuff. He's being set up more this year. Because he's down the pecking order in terms of, you know, Simmons and Redick being there and Embiid playing a full season. So 89% of his shots are assisted this season. We're really, you know, taking those shots as a spot up guy from three, 96% from three. So it's not that he's taking necessarily harder shots. So that's why I have a limited confidence in him becoming this hyper efficient guy, because he's doing it all in ideal circumstances, people setting him up on open shots most of the time. So that's, I guess, a little bit of a concern. But the fact that he's hitting 39% and getting assisted on so many threes is a positive there. He is a guy that's taking over 65% of his shots from deep, which suits exactly what he needs to do. And this is the best efficiency season of his career. Where do we go from him in Dynasty? I think that he's got another 2 years of being a top 100 guy, at least maybe three. It really depends on what the Sixers end up doing in free agency, what they end up doing in the draft. But given the way they're playing, they're not going to have elite draft picks really anymore unless we get unless they miss the playoffs and get the number one pick this year, or that happens again next year with that Kings pick. So they've still got some decent assets coming their way, not as much in the past, and their pick, of course, is not going to be any good. So the thing I guess you have to worry about is with him having, or with them having max cap space, does one of the wings, LeBron, Paul George, which seems pretty bloody unlikely, but do one of those guys end up in Philadelphia, and that puts a limit on what Covington can do. So I think you have to look at what he's done these last two seasons as peak fantasy value for him, and he probably tails off to be an 80 guy for a couple of years and then probably fades outside the top 100. But for this year, the percentage, I think, will start to go up again at some point. He'll go on a nice little hot streak. We'll get the steals back going, but he's never going to be a 15-point per game guy. He's never going to be this elite 23-24% usage player. That's just not going to happen. He's a catch-and-shoot three-point guy who can rebound, block, and get steals, and that all, of course, has value in fantasy. Not everything is about usage. Let's now look at the perfect DFS lineups. Over on FanDuel, Andy Harrison had 35.8, Kyle Lowry 52.5, Beal had 53.2, Dan Green 44.7, and Gerald Green had 24. Paulie George 61.5, Blakey Griffin had 49.5, Jezza Grant had 31.2, and Nick Jokic had 71.1 for a total of 423.5, and that cost $59,900. On DraftKings, Andy Harrison 36.5, The Blue Arrow 46.25, Dan Green 43, Jeremy Grant 30.5, Nick Jokic 75.25, Lowry had 51.75, Paulie George had 62.75, and Brad Beal 52 for a total of 398, and that cost $49,000. Let's get into these games, try and break down what we think is going to happen over on Friday's slate. 9-game Friday. The first one of these games is the Indiana Pacers and the Charlotte Hornets. Miles Turner is questionable with a knee. Just after he was starting to get things rolling again, some knee soreness popping up, and that's a pain in the ass for us, clearly. For Charlotte, we know Marvin Williams is out. Cody Zeller is likely to make his return, and Frank the Tank is probable with a thumb sprain. If Turner is out, then Domantas Sabonis, of course, will get the start. You'll get Al Jefferson getting those backup minutes, and it bumps a little bit of value for a guy like Thaddeus Young. At point guard, Kemba is fairly highly priced here at $8,700. He's been crushing it. The Pacers have been really good defensively against point guard, so I think that Kemba at that price is in fade territory for me. A guy like Daz Collison, they've bumped him to $5,900. He's been getting you consistent numbers. His lowest score over the last five is 27. But there is still a concern that I have over him in terms of where the playing time will be. But I think that if Turner is out, it does stabilize Daz just a little bit for his consistent outside shooting, and he would be okay for cash, but not really a high upside tournament sort of a player. Corey Joseph, we don't care for. Nick Batum at 6,100 as a shooting guard. I like what Batum's been doing. I think this is a pretty good spot for him, so I like using him at that price. While Oladipo down to $9,000, that's getting a little bit better, but the Hornets have been really good against shooting guards this season. Oladipo, probably still only looking at him as a GPP guy because that price is probably a little bit too high still. At small forward, Kid Gilchrist is at 48, not really interested in that one too much. Boyan and Lance at 47 and 4,000, not really doing a huge amount for me either. At power forward, Young is at 6,200. If Miles Turner is out, I'd be interested in using Thad, but that's probably about it. Well, Frank the Tank at 43. Wasn't a great game in that start, but played 30 minutes. So at 4,300, I think you do have to look at using him and feeling okay about a 23 point floor, which of course at 4,300 is pretty bloody good. Sabonis at 6,400, even if Turner plays, I wouldn't be locking him in cash. It gives him more value, but I don't think that he would be an elite option at that price. Zeller at 37 as a center, not really caring too much there, while Miles Turner at 6,900.
Giggity!
With the uncertainty, we are going to find out before lineups lock, so that's a positive there. At that sort of a price against Dwight Howard, even though centers have been putting up some decent numbers against Dwight lately, I think it's more tournament, whereas Howard at 10,000, I feel okay about using Howard in cash and in tournaments, given how well he has been playing of late. On DraftKings, Oladipo at 86, again, coming down a bit. I still like that more tournament than cash, while Kaminsky at 47 is higher than FanDuel, so that puts it out of cash zone for me, more tournaments. Dwight at 9-2, I love for a tournament, and Turner at 6-3. If he plays, which we don't know, I really like Turner at 6-3. I think there is cash value in that. For him on DraftKings, not much else really stands out to being in a great opportunity. Kemba's still or even higher price than what he is over on FanDuel, so that's going to be a no from me there. The next game we're looking at is the Lakers and the Brooklyn Nets, Brook Lopez revenge game. The Nets are favored by 1.5, and the total is 217.5. We've also got D'Angelo Russell going up against his former team. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is out. Caris LeVert is probable, so he is likely to be back. So it's going to be interesting to see how the LeVert, Russell, Jumpin' Joe Harris, Spencer Dinwiddie backcourt runs in this one. There's going to be some real interesting things as to how they distribute those minutes. Does Spencer go down to 25 or 26? Does Caris play under 20? How's Russell looking in his return? So there's going to be a few interesting things to look at with that rotation. Spencer Dinwiddie's at 6,500, and because of the uncertainty, I would not look at him in cash. It's a brilliant matchup, so absolutely in a tournament, but that's really about it for him. Tyler Ennis, who'll start for the Lakers, who have Lonzo Ball out. You should not care about that at all. At shooting guard, Jordy Clarkson's at 6,500. Limited minutes, but still put up 34 in the last game. Absolutely worth a look against the Nets team. We know Nets against point guards, it's really, really interesting. And Clarko has been putting up some good numbers, so I am in on him. LeVert at 49's a fade. Kentavious at 52's a fade. Or D'Angelo, they've gone cool. You had a big game in the last one, mate, so let's get that salary right up there. 6,100 for D'Angelo. Good matchup. Played well the last time against the Lakers, had 41 points in 35 minutes, but he's not getting 35 minutes here. More of a tournament. Again, just don't feel confident that he's going to drop the 38 that he did in the last game in only 17 minutes. That seems a little bit far-fetched. At small forward, Ingram's at 6,400. Maybe. No, I think I'll end up with a no on Ingram there. While Damari Carroll at 5,800, it's probably about $400 too highly priced, so a little bit tough. But the matchup's interesting for Carroll, so you could use him as a GPP. I just don't think his upside's really high enough to make sense of that. The blue swimmer will fade that, and Jumpin' Joe Harris, just too many mouths to feed. At power forward, Larry Nance Jr. is at 5,400. He is in the slam dunk competition alongside, who else in it? Aaron Gordon is in it. I forget, Dennis Smith Jr. And there's one other one that I'm missing. Is it Oladipo? Yeah, it's Oladipo that's in the dunk contest. So that's going to be an interesting contest. Let's hope. Well, let's hope it's an interesting contest. Anyway, 5,400 for Larry Nance, I don't care for. The future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, is at 5,100 because his performances have been poor lately. But I think that this is a really good spot for Kuzma, and I'm super interested to see him in tournaments and in cash games. I think he can be used at center. Randle, 6,600 for Julius. Great matchup. We know centers go off against the Nets. Will he play much center? He'll play a decent amount. I still don't love it as a must roster guy just because of that salary. His numbers have been pretty good lately, and he's got a fairly solid floor. So you could use him with that upside, built into the price there. He can go off. So I don't mind it. I just don't love it. Jarrett Allen is at 4,800. He had 37 starting. He will start again. And I think that at that price, he is a strong tournament play, as is Jahlil Okafor at 4,000. I wouldn't want to use either of them in cash, though, at this point. While Lopez at 39, he dropped 55 the last time these two teams played, but he played 9 minutes in the last game, was visibly pissed, and it doesn't appear like they have any plans to use him more than that. You might want to get sucked into revenge game narrative, and I could look completely stupid when he comes out and plays 30 minutes and has 75 points. Again, stupidly unlikely. But I think that it's a fade, even though centers go off against the Nets, even though he played well against them last time. I just don't think he's going to get enough minutes for it to make any sort of a difference. Over on DraftKings, there's nothing that I love on DraftKings for this game. The prices are a little bit high. I think Okafor at 3,800 is pretty good, and I could actually see that even being a cash play, despite how bad he stunk against Philadelphia. It's a good matchup for him. Not much else stands out. You know, Spencer's Dinwiddie's a GPP guy. Kuzma's probably a bit high at 56. Nance, no interest. Jordy Clarkson at 65 is a more of a tournament sort of guy. Nothing screams, look at these must roster guys in this game. Or Jarrett Allen at 46, you could look at as a tournament sort of a player as well. The next game we look at, we've got the Hawks. We have got the Boston Celtics. We don't know the status of Kyrie Irving. We don't know the status of Marcus Morris, and we don't know the status of Dennis Schroeder. So there's a lot of stuff that can change. If Schroeder is out, Malcolm Delaney would be your guy. You could also take a flyer on Isaiah Taylor, and it bumps the value of Kent Bazemore. In Boston, of course, if Kyrie is out, we're all aboard Terry Rozier, who triple-doubled in the last game. Rozier is still a decently strong option, even though his salary has gone up. He's going to be way better if Kyrie is out. If Morris is out, we're looking at Abdul Nadir. We're looking at Semi Ojeleye there. We're looking at a little bit more Vanilla Tice as well, but not much that's going to change a huge amount in terms of DFS numbers. At point guard, Schroeder at 7,000, Kyrie at 89. I love the matchup for Irving if he plays. I don't think that he will play, but you could use him as a tournament guy. As for Schroeder at 7,000, yeah, bad, bad matchup for him. Sore shoulder. Potential blowout, I think that's a stay-away zone. As for Rozier, 6,500, of course, that's when with Kyrie out we're looking at. Otherwise, if Kyrie's in, if he plays 25 minutes, if Shane Larkin gets some minutes, there is a concern that he won't get the minutes to get anywhere near that salary. So he could be a really strong fade. Bazemore at 62, I like this spot for Bazemore, mainly because I don't think that Schroeder's going to be in there. Bellinelli at 42, very little to care about. At small forward, Jalen's at 5,900, just not getting anywhere near that sort of a value. Tournaments only, not really any cash talk there. While the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, actually the basketball player formerly known as Taurean Prince, at the moment he is a statue. He is at 4,100, he's going to have low ownership. Could he be the GPP breakout weird performance guy? Maybe. I wouldn't put it past him. I think he'll start again. I think there's a chance he plays 32 minutes and has a big game. It's a low percentage chance, but low percentage is what his ownership will be. That can actually turn some things in GPPs for you. At power forward, Jason Tatum at $6,000. Not sure if you're aware, but he's 19 years of age, and he is putting together some strong numbers, but not strong enough for me to like that at 6,000. The Baptist at 48. well, the minutes are just continuing to piss me off, while Ersan's at 4,700, really very limited interest in any of those guys. You could look at Vanilla Tice at 38. If Marcus Morris is out, I think there's some GPP upside there. At centre, Al Horford, 7,700 against his former team, if you want to buy into that. I don't care that it's against his former team. I care that centres have been putting up big numbers against Atlanta. 7,700, though, is probably a little bit elevated as a price. I love his floor, and I think he's got 45-point upside, so he would be a guy that I would consider. The Undertaker at 5,000, Bainsey at 36, Muscala and Miles Plumlee, very little limited interest in any of those guys. And by limited, I mean pretty much none at all. On DraftKings, the Baptist at 44 comes into consideration as a GPP guy. Kyrie at 87, we'd love that if we knew he was playing, but we don't. 76 for Horford's probably a little bit too high over on DraftKings, but it's not a terrible cash play. Bazemore at 6 I like, and Rozier at 66, of course, that is only going to happen if Kyrie is out. The next game we take a look at, it's the Trailblazers. It's the Toronto Raptors. A lot of people telling me that they like the Blazers jerseys the best out of all the City Edition jerseys. I like the idea of it. I love the idea of plaid, but I think they went too soft on it. If you're going to go plaid, go sick. Make them look like they're wearing tartan out there. It was so hard on the court, it just looked like they were wearing black with like red accents. It didn't look like plaid at all. So I think they went a little bit soft on it. And could have done better. Definitely not my number one City Edition jersey, which you know by now is the Utah Jazz. I love the Heat one. I love the look of it on court. I thought it was a little bit too white and not as good as the Jazz one. That is my number one jersey. A couple have disappointed on court. The Heat, the Magic, and the Blazers have disappointed how they looked on court, whereas I thought the Jazz one looked absolutely sensational out there. Enough talk on jerseys. Point guard, Dame Lillard, 8,800. Decent matchup, but not the best one. We know that Lowry can reduce the output of opposition point guards. I think Lillard at 8,800 is a tournament guy, and I put him there mainly because he has had success against Lowry in the past, 50-point average the last three times. As for Lowry, 7,300, he's done well against against Portland as well. So I like Lowry more, save myself $1,500. I would take him over Lowry in cash. I'd probably take Lillard in a GPP more. Shabazz Napier, D'Lon Wright, Fred VanVleet, can't really see any of them being all that good options. I could use maybe VanVleet, but probably not. We don't know if he's going to play after having a child. Well, not him, because that would have been a pretty significant feat, his partner. DeMar DeRozan at 8,700. Yeah, look, he's been strong. He's got a 36 average over his last five, but that's just not cutting it at that salary, so I don't think that he is a strong option. Well, McCollum's coming off that game against the Bulls, and that the key part of that sentence is against the Bulls, who allow guards and shooting guards to just torch them all the time. That's not so much the case with Lowry and DeRozan. While he's not a great defender, he's adequate, he's better than Zach LaVine, and then you can throw in guys like the Jedi, and you can throw Normie Powell, you can throw D'Lon Wright in there as well, so I think that's a fade to me for CJ coming off that big game against the Chicago Bulls. At small forward, Evan Turner, CJ Miles, the Jedi, all priced under 4,000. If I'm going to take one of them, it's going to be Turner at 3,700, who is the starter and does have 30-point upside. I don't see Miles or the Jedi really doing too much there. At power forward, Serge is at 5,800. Serge Ibaka, good matchup for Serge. I think that's not a bad spot to go and use him. He did only have 19 points in 35 minutes today, but he played 35 minutes, and I think that's a positive in a positive matchup. Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
I think we've got a shit one coming here for the Chief. I think that's a fade. While Eddie Davis at 46, Yusuf Nurkic has been upgraded to probable, so that limits the value of Davis. But he could have one of those weird games where Nurkic plays limited minutes or the leg acts up and Eddie goes out there and puts up 27. But of course, we're not looking at him for cash. At center, Valanciunas at 6,300. With all the uncertainty about how the minutes go, he's been killing it. The lowest score he's had in his last five is 26. I still am not ready to buy in, but it is a good matchup. So if you're convinced the minutes are going to stay high, then this is a good spot to use Valanciunas. As for Nurk at 62, I cannot in good conscience get behind that as an option. On DraftKings, I like Lillard at 85. I like DeRozan at 77 a lot. Lowry at 72 and Ibaka at 55. I think they're all good cash options. I'm fading McCollum. Valanciunas at 58 is really hard to go past. My my level of risk with him feels it's high. But when you see him at that sort of a price, especially in comparison to Fangio, I'm much more on board with using JV over on DK. All right, let's move it on to the next game. Who have we got? We've got the Miami Heat taking on the Philadelphia 76ers. The Sixers are favored by 4. The total is 202 points. I don't think we're going to see Markelle Fultz here in this one. And that's really the only injury concern for the Philadelphia 76ers. At point guard, the all-star, the iron shoulder, Goran Dragic, 6,300. I'm all about using Dragic here. I think there's cash and tournament value. While Tyler Johnson at 51. Been a little bit disappointing, but 5,100 is not a high price, so I think that he is absolutely worth a GPP look. Timothy John McConnell, probably not happening there, averaging 7 points in the last 3. That's clearly not getting it done. At shooting guard, Reddick's at 5,200. In his last 5 games, his lowest score is 25. I feel like for cash, you should feel good about that. Now, the defense for Miami can be a worry. They can defend things pretty well against three-point shooters, so that would give me a level of pause, and it would probably, in the end, make me end up fading Redick, but he's been really, really strong this season. The Duke Wayne Ellington's at 44, really hard to use him at cash, and more of a tournament guy. Bob Cove's at 5,900, same with him, tournaments only, but not strongly. Well, Joshy Richardson at 6,200. Yeah, I just feel like that price is taking away a lot of upside for Richo, and I'm not confident in the floor to bring back that sort of value. Justice Winslow and Justin Anderson, not interested. Power forward, Benny Simmons, 8,600. We know that point guards against the Heat do struggle. Simmons is obviously a different animal in that regard. I feel okay about him. I think he's a solid-ish cash guy with some tournament upside, where you've got Šarić at 6,700. I think that's more of a fade here for me with Dario. Well, Jimmy Johnson at 51. He's really rarely made us proud this season, which is unfortunate. Haven't got to play his song very much. I'm not really expecting much to change here. Olynyk's at 45, Amir Johnson's at 35, and I don't really care for either of them. At center, Joel Embiid, 10,500. I go more tournament, especially given the way the Heat defend slower-paced games. 10-5 is probably a fade for me. He has struggled a little bit against them. Him and the Hassan Whiteside-Joel Embiid rivalry is going to be reignited, so maybe Embiid comes out and just really drops a ribbon of turd right across Hassan Whiteside's forehead and says, hey, what do you think about that, mate? Or it could go completely awry. So that's why I like him as a tournament guy. I think in cash, it's probably just a little bit too high. Whiteside at 7,700. How's he going to go chasing Embiid out onto long twos, out to threes? I fear there could be a minutes limit thing or a minutes being limited thing happen here for Hassan. At 7,700, I don't love it, but he's got a sensational history against the Sixers, some with Joel, some without. 47 average over his last 3 in only 27 minutes. So that would make me look at him as a tournament guy, but that's really about it. Well, Adebayo at 41. I think Adebayo is one of the sneakiest low-owned percentage guys that you can look at in a tournament here. I just get the feeling that Whiteside might get into some trouble. Some foul trouble is a real possibility. And Bam gets out there and he can keep up with Embiid and provide some strength body-wise. It might be a completely off-base thing, but if I'm throwing multiple tournament lineups out there, I think Adebayo is going to be a very low-owned guy that could really do some interesting stuff for you. On DraftKings, I like Šarić at 64, way more on DraftKings than on FanDuel. Embiid at 9.6 and Covington at 53 are the tournament guys. Really interested in Covington at 53, but of course, it's only in tournament. Simo at 81 is a decently strong cash play also, while I don't like the iron shoulder at 7,000, and I don't like Hassan Whiteside at 7,900 on DraftKings. Let's look at the next one. We've got the Knicks. We've got the Milwaukee Bucks. I was going to say the Bulls. The Bucks are favored by 4.5. The total is 208. I'm going to assume we don't have Malcolm Brogdon for this game. I think that's a fair assumption. We don't know the status of Eric Bledsoe, Jason Terry, or Yanni Adetokounmpo. So plenty of things could change. With Brogdon out, I imagine Snell starts and Sterling Brown gets more minutes. We're going to have the return of Jabari Parker, but we're looking at 15 minutes here, so nothing to really see. Of course, if Bledsoe is out, then Dellavedova Dover's into play. More minutes for Sterling Brown as well. And if Yanni's out on top of that, then you're all about Sterlo. You're giving some minutes to our sexy boy Sean Kilpatrick. You're looking at Dally in a lot of spots and shit. You might even consider Tone Snell. So there's lots of different opportunities here with the Bucks, depending on how all this injury news is received. As for Bledsoe, he's at 6,800. If he plays, I'm all about that. I think that's a really good cash option against a really good matchup for point guards. Speaking of the Knicks point guards, Jarrett Jack, Frankie Ntilikina, Trey Burke, no way of trusting any of them, no way of really considering any of them GPP or cash guys, obviously. Chrissy Middleton at 75 could be in for a monster usage night, so you really have to monitor the Yanni and Bledsoe news. He could be in for an absolute monster. He's averaging 41 points over his last five anyway and could get a boost to that, so he could be a real strong cash play. Timmy Hardaway's at 56. He struggled in that second half of back-to-back last game. Should get the minutes back up, and I think he's a good tournament play, while Courtney Lee at 47 is not doing it for me. Of course, Sterlo Brown, minimum salary. There's a huge opportunity for him here, so I like him for tournaments. And one of these guys is out, Yanni or Bledsoe, then I think that he becomes a cash player. Tone Snell's at 4,000. Even if everyone's out, I don't think Snell's worth a cash look. He just is so unproductive when he gets minutes. But he can have those weird games where he hits six threes in a quarter and you go, shit, Tone Snell, maybe he's good. And then you go, nah, you know what? He's not. So 4,000 for him is a tournament look. Small forward, Adetokunbo, $12,000. I think that's a fade, and that's not even to do with his ankle injury. So I think we're staying well away from Yanni here. Mick Beasley at 5,700, a little bit too high with Hardaway playing. Power forwards, Porzingis, 8,300. Steve. Yeah, negative matchup for him. Has really struggled to get to the value he needs to at that price. I don't think that that's really a good one to look at. While the Muppet at 55 just keeps churning out the numbers you want. I think he's a safe cash play here. And I'm sure he'll go out and shit the bed. Jabari's at 4,700. I don't expect him to exceed that in his limited minutes. At center, Enes Kanter at 7,000. Just putting up numbers, just dropping it on fools' heads every game. We've seen centers against the Bucks put up big numbers. Not so much lately. They've been much improved in that area. I think 7,000 is probably just a little bit too much to spend for Enes. Koch at minimum salary has been putrid. Actually split his minutes with Bill Hernan Gomez recently, or in that last game. So I'm not looking at him, and I'm not looking at Bill either at a minimum salary spot. Thon McCurr also, we can leave him alone. Let's go on to DraftKings. Yanni at 10.8, if he played, would be in a much better spot. Like that salary a lot for him, but we don't know the status of him. And Johnny Henson, the Muppet at 48, that is just one of the best cash. Lock it in. Let's get me 27 and let's build around it. I really, really like that for the Muppet. Limited upside, of course, but absolutely love the floor on Henson there with the way that he's been playing. Middleton at 73 could go through the roof as well, so I think you have to really be looking at him in most formats, and of course the Sterling Brown and Matty Dellavedova upside if we have the Bledsoe and Brogdon injuries confirmed is real, so you can use those guys also. The next game we're going to take a look at, we've got the Jazz. And we've got the Phoenix Suns. Greg Monroe gone, of course. Alex Len is questionable for the Suns. If he is out, you're going to see more Jared Dudley as Bender plays, and Bender and Chris play more at the five behind Chandler. And Tyson Chandler might actually push to 27 or 30 minutes, and that could give him some sneaky cash value. We know that Rocket Rodney Hood is already ruled out, so that bumps a guy like Ravishing Rick Rubio. Speaking of Rubio, he's at 5,900, which is pretty bloody high, but with the Rocket already being out, I think you should have a level of confidence in Rubio. Maybe not enough to look at him in cash, but he dropped 46 in the last game. He's averaging 31 over his last five, so I think a decent level of confidence is not misplaced in Rubio with Hood already ruled out. Tyler Ulis, Hull Neto, no. Shooting guard, Don Mitchell, the Don, 7,900. The shooting hasn't quite been there for him, but still dropped 41 against the Warriors in that last game. Like him a lot. I think he's a reliable cash guy. Well, Devin Booker at 77, a little bit disappointing returning from the rib injury. I think it's bothering him, and if that could still be a bother. And teamed up with the negative matchup might make me actually fade Booker here, where he's been relatively strong recently, but still averaging only 31 over his last five, which is nowhere near where it needs to be for the 7,700 price tag. Alec Burks is at 37. He played a lot in that last game, but I'm not expecting repeat performances. Troy Daniels, Daniel House, don't really care for those guys. That's small forward. I'm loving Joshie Jackson here, 5,300. He dropped 40 in the last game. I imagine he starts again, plays minutes, and can rack up stats in multiple areas. So I like Josh Jackson for cash and tournaments, whereas TJ at 6,800, I think that's not a bad cash play. Maybe a limited tournament guy, but a decent enough cash guy. Jinglin Joe's at 48, who is also benefiting from Rocket being out, and he's been a pretty okay, How's that for damning with our faint praise? He's been pretty okay as a cash guy. I look in other directions most of the time. At power forward, we've got Derek Favors at 62. Some strong games from him in limited minutes. I don't really feel super good, although the matchup is a nice one for Faves. So you can throw him in a GPP while Dragons at minimum salary for a very good reason. The other guy, of course, we look at is Marquise Chris at 5,000. Which Marquise Chris do we get? The one that can rack up stats or the one that puts up 3 fouls in 3 minutes? That's why it is hard to rely upon him for cash. And also, given the negative matchup, would make me restrict him to being a tournament guy and a tournament guy only. At center, I like Tyson Chandler for cash at 4,800 with no Munro around, with Len potentially not playing. He could get 30 minutes, give you 25 points, and you're happy with that. As for Len at 4,100, the ankle injury, yeah, the matchup's a real, it's actually a real good one. Over recent times, despite the presence of Rudy Gobert, I still wouldn't be interested in using Len in any sort of circumstance, given the unknown. As for Gobert, brilliant matchup for him, 7,800. Still think that it's more of a tournament look than a cash one. Let's go on to DraftKings for this one. I like Booker more at 7,600 over there. The scoring system suits him more, but there is still that level of concern. The Dons at 78, absolutely worth looking at. Ravishing Rick at 62, I think is too high. Joshie Jackson at 52 is a strong play over there also. We've got two games to go to finish off this podcast and finish off the week. That next game we're going to talk about is Nikola Mirotic's new team, and that is the New Orleans Pelicans taking on the... who are they taking on? Where am I? The Oklahoma City Thunder, of course. The Thunder are favored by 6.5. The total is 219. Mirotic is not going to play in this one. Well, Dante Cunningham has increased his status to probable after missing the majority of the last game. So no Mirotic in this one. At point guard, Westbrook's at 12-3. Really like the spot for Westbrook. Good matchup for him, and we know how good he can be and fit in some minimum salary guys or lower salary guys around him. It works. Rondo at 49. There's always the chance that a weird game comes. It's very limited. Tournaments only for Rondo, definitely not for cash. Well, Ian Clark at 37. I think you should absolutely have him on your tournament radar. 27 points in 30 minutes in the last game with no Jameer Nelson. It probably benefits Clark more than Rondo, to be honest, because he's better. At shooting guard, Drew Holiday, 8,200. A rock-solid cash sort of a player. Really like Drew there to get you close to 40. Think that's pretty strong. And then Terry Ferguson, Alex Abrines. Abrines did well today, but I don't really buy that as something that's going to continue to happen. Paulie George at 82. Obviously killed it today. Absolutely fine to use in cash. Not cash, not my number one priority, but an option. Etuan Moore, Darius Miller. I think they're probably a little bit too highly priced. Well, Dante Cunningham is just bad, and 4,200 is too high. Power forwards, Tone Davis, 12-3. Really high price, clearly, for Davis. I think that he's still worth a look there. I'd say more tournament-y than say, Russ at the same price, but he's still worth a go, and you could use him in cash and get away with it. While Mallow at 6-4, bad game from Mallow today. I think he can bounce back and get you a 30-plus pointer. Jezza Grant at 38 had a strong performance today also. I think he's in a good matchup, and he is absolutely in your GPP pool. At center, Steve Adams, 7,000. I think I'll fade Adams here. It's probably just a little bit too high for a guy who I believe has, somewhat limited upside. Let's go to the next DraftKings. Sorry, I like Westbrook at 11-6 and Rondo at 4-6 again. More just a tournament. Drew at 7-7 strong. Davis at 11-4 is in a good spot, and Paulie George at 7-4 is really, really good. Really super strong value there for Paul George over on DraftKings. The last game of the night, we're looking at the Golden State Warriors and the Sacramento Kings. I just fade the shit out of it for cash. I don't see how you can get anything interesting happening here. For the Kings, Willie Cauley-Stein is likely back. Scalabissiere is ruled out for the next 2 to 3 weeks. Kevin Looney is likely playing for the Warriors. We've got Sean Livingston has been ruled out for personal reasons. And then we don't know who's going to rest. Garrett Temple, Zach Randolph, Costa Kufos, George Hill, Vince Carter. Don't know who's going to play. Malachi Richardson did not practice, so I'd have to assume he doesn't play. There's just so many unknowns with this team in terms of how they're going to run their rotations. But given that Labissiere's out, I feel pretty good about Randolph or Kufos being used in tournaments just to have that upside value of them playing big minutes as they have done in the last couple of games. But this could be an absolute, you know, smashing 30 points in the third quarter type of style. And I know the Kings have beaten the Warriors already this season. I just think there is real smashing potential here. So a lot of these guys are tournament guys. Steph's at 10-2, GPP. He can drop 55 in 29 minutes, no worries. De'Aaron Fox, 5,900. Probably a little bit high for Foxy. It is a decent matchup. The Warriors have been getting allowing point guards to put up some okay numbers. And he's been fairly strong recently, Fox. So it's not the worst cash play out there. I just don't think it's necessarily the best one. At shooting guard, Clay's at 7,000. Just always on GPP watch, Thompson. While Bogdan's at 4,900. Has been quite disappointing with his numbers lately. And some weird minutes thrown in there some of the time. The Clay Thompson defensive negative matchup is a worry, so he's probably in fade spot for me. While Budrick at 5,000, just doing nothing, not getting the minutes. Tournament only if you're going to use him. I can't see it happening for cash. At small forward, Durant at 10,700, much like Steph, he could blow up quite comfortably. I don't feel really good about using him though here. Iguodala at 41, Justin Jackson, Vince Carter, no interest in any of those blokes. Draymond's at 85, and I think that's probably a little bit too high. If he was lower, I think it would be a good spot to use Draymond, but no at that price. Randolph at 7,000 is an extraordinarily high price, so he is really moving into fade territory on FanDuel. You could use him in GPP, but that's a high price. And then at center, Kufos at 46, absolutely a GPP guy with Labissiere out. They could play him big minutes. He had 46 in the last game, Kufos in 37 minutes. And the other guy there is Papianis or Zaza, and I don't think we need to be looking at them too closely. On DraftKings, again, same story. You could throw some of these guys, Steph and Durant, into tournaments, but that's really about it. Clay maybe in a tournament. Is Zebo at 62 has a little bit more cash appeal, but really it's just a game that's not ideal for our DFS purposes, especially for cash. All right. Let's go on now and look at the other DFS sites and see what we can do with them. On Yahoo, for tournaments, where's my list? Alex Len, Alan Crabb, Jahlil Okafor, Ian Clark, Justice Winslow. They're the tournament-only type of guys. For both, I think Darius Miller, Ed Davis, Jarrett Allen, Tyson Chandler, Terry Rozier, Joshie Jackson, Frank the Tank, the Muppet, John Henson, Don Mitchell, Draymond Green, DeMar DeRozan, Dwight Howard, and Joel Embiid. On Moneyball tournaments, Westbrook, Howard, Steph, Al Horford, Clay, Zebo, Serge Ibaka, Alec Burks, Jahlil Okafor, Ian Clark. For cash, we've got Ingles, Jarrett Allen, Rozier, Joshie Jackson, Frank the Tank, Batum, Rubio, Mallo, Miles Turner if he plays, Don Mitchell, Draymond Green. And on DraftStars, for tournaments, there's Zach Randolph, we've got Rajon Rondo, Kyle Kuzma, Bogdan Bogdanovic, The Duke, Marquise Chris, Dante Cunningham, Jahlil Okafor, Ian Clark, and Royce O'Neal. And for cash, Darius Miller, Jarrett Allen, Tyson Chandler, Joshie Jackson, Frank Kaminsky, Jason Tatum, Ravishing Rick Rubio, Dario Saric, the Don Mitchell, as a lot of these other guys are quite highly priced, like Tone and in weird spots, you know, like Russell Westbrook, Adetokounmpo, Durant, Davis, Curry, Embiid. None of those guys stand out. If you want to spend up big on someone, I look at Howard at his price on DraftStars, and probably a guy like Durant has more GPP appeal over there. Don't forget, guys, if you are listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star review. You can also find the show on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify. Also YouTube, where you can subscribe. Give it a thumbs up and leave a comment. Check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network on Twitter at LockedOnNBAnet. My name is Josh Lloyd. I'm the lead fantasy analyst at BasketballMonster.com. Follow me on Twitter at RedRock_Beeball. Enjoy your weekend. Good luck with your head-to-head leagues. Good luck with your rotisserie leagues. Good luck with your points leagues. And good luck with your DFS lineups. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. John Paxson.